You cannot fund transformation and social welfare unless you have GDP growing faster than the birth rate and all of that good stuff. We need 3% GDP. You will not get it by blunting the spear. You'll only get it by encouraging capital.
Mark, hi, good morning. How are you?
Well, you know, I didn't get to bed early last night because the Blitzbooker were playing in the seven-a-side tournament for the World Championships in Los Angeles. So I had to sit up till late, but it was really worth it because, first of all, one of my private delights in life is to give the All Blacks a good hiding on the rugby field, which we did in the semi-final, and then we beat Spain in the final.
Right.
And so we are once again the world champions. And I celebrate the Blitzbooker and the Springboks for reasons beyond rugby.
Okay.
They are the manifestation of a successful mixture between transformation and a meritocracy.
Yes.
They are the standout poster child
yes.
for that success story, and it works.
Right.
Blitzbooker, go Blitzbooker.
You know, we've discussed this before, but why do you think that happened? Can I make a suggestion that in the case of rugby, success is not an option. You can't delay success. You can't get past the absolute need.
There is a time limit.
To have yeah. quality. Of course you yeah. have transformation, right? But you also have quality. That's the quality is the main thing. Is that right? Is that too simple?
Well, no, I think it's even simpler than that.
Okay.
It's common purpose.
Right.
There's common purpose. And that common purpose, not only in rugby but in other team sports, results in the team results being, you know, more important than the individual result. Okay. And
right.
And I remember we said this again before that in soccer, they used to give bonuses to the guy who scored the goal. Now they give as big a bonus to the assist,
right.
to the guy who enabled the goal to happen.
Right.
And so when you're in a team sport like rugby, if you don't pass the ball, you're not going to score the try. If you there's common purpose
right.
and a recognition of a higher calling than your own individual performance. So that's why. And if we just embrace those two things broadly in South Africa,
yes.
we would be a long way ahead of where we are now, where we have anything but common purpose. I mean, it seems to me that the GNU is just this fest pot of, you know, individual and not aligned interests and political debate, Trump's fundamental reason and all of these things. And so we need common purpose.
Yes. You need your incentives aligned, don't you?
Yeah.
It's funny how what a profound idea that is. And what a simple idea it is.
Yeah.
And maybe it's profound because yeah, it's simple.
It's profound in its statement and its corollary.
Right.
If you pass, you score a try. If you don't pass, you don't score tries.
Right.
Okay, I mean, hello. You know, it's as clear as mud. Okay.
Right.
Anyway, well done to the okay. to the Booker, but can you do it in our time zone more often?
All right. Oh. Just to follow up on that idea, what do you make of the new budget? What should be different in this budget than the other budgets, apart from the fact that there is no,
yeah.
you know, tax increase? What would you yeah. like to see, not like to see? What do you think about it?
I would focus on the expense side of the balance sheet.
Okay.
Okay. Because that is the one thing you have quite a lot of control over in business, you know. And so if your economic model doesn't yield a profit, the first place you look to is your cost structure.
Okay. Right.
And our cost structure is not only too big, but it's misdirected. It's, you know, 400 odd billion on interest. It's, I mean, 90% of it's on interest,
yes.
social welfare and government employees. And that's just not going to be the foundation for future investment. So I think we have to do the hard yards. And they don't take long. If you did 18 months of hard yards,
right,
in terms of saying, guys, we don't do anything here that doesn't yield a positive margin or attract capital.
Yes.
Just those two rules. Test. You have these tests and say, does that yield a positive margin? No, we don't do it. Not for the next 18 months. We don't do it. Does that attract investment? Does that is the project that we're looking to invest in investable beyond political purpose or self-interest? Or does it stand
right.
as an economic investment? And if you just pass those two tests for the next 18 months, we'd be on a different course. It doesn't take much.
You know what's so interesting? I've been following Argentina, you know, a country about which I know basically nothing. So, you know, take this from whence it comes. But it was amazing to me. So, you know, as we know, they were a bit of a basket case, very similar to us in many ways.
Yeah.
Also a southern country, same sort of population. They're slightly more developed than we are, but basically we're in the same camp. And also, you know, in some ways you could say that we had a Peronist government. And we have a Peronist government, a government, you know, we're very orientated towards the needs of the poor, in, you know, if you're putting it positively, and very orientated towards spending other people's money if you're putting it negatively.
Yeah.
They went into an economic crisis, huge inflation, and they just by chance hired this crazy guy, academic Xavier Millet, and he said he's going to do all kinds of crazy things, and he had the chainsaw and all of that sort of stuff. So he cuts 25% out of the budget, which was just amazing. And everybody said, if you do that, you will cause an economic crisis of, you know, gargantuan proportions. Cut 25% out of the budget. It's impossible. You can't do that. And you will cause real pain in society. So he said he would. He did. There was pain. But here's the weird thing. They do these very careful measurements in apparently in Argentina to measure the poverty rate. The poverty rate has gone down since he...
Of course it has.
Yes. It went up for a bit, but in a year, in 1 year, the poverty rate went down.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
But these things present themselves as self-evident to me. I mean, you cannot fund transformation or social welfare without capital formation. You run out of money.
Yes.
Okay. You squeeze, there's no more juice in the lemon. Okay. And so you have to, at first, create earnings and then disperse them, you know, according to the needs of your population and so on. So, you know, you cannot, I mean, the tax base is shrinking, the capital is running away, people are divesting that vineyard forever, they are taking their plants and things away and so on. So it's self-evident to everybody, including the poor man,
yes,
who will sit there and go, hang on, they're building a factory down here. That's cool.
Yes.
I saw a cartoon the other day saying, you know, Happy Workers' Day. And the response was, I'd rather work for a day than have Workers' Day. Okay. You know, and so you cannot fund transformation and social welfare unless you have GDP growing faster than the birth rate and various, and, you know, and all of that good stuff. We need 3% GDP. You will not get it by taxing, by blunting the spear.
Right.
You'll only get it by encouraging capital.
Right. So do you think...
It's obvious.
The finance minister says that we're going to need to find 75 billion rand. That's what the VAT increase was aimed to. It was that hole that the VAT increase was aimed. Are you worried about that? I mean, are you worried that if you take that away and keep your expenditure the same, basically we're just borrowing ourselves into perdition even faster than we would have been otherwise?
Yeah, in isolation, of course I'm worried about it. I'm totally worried about the fact that we only look for what we want rather than what we can create, you know. And so if you said to me, Mark, create 75 billion, I wouldn't take it from existing thriving businesses in the form of VAT and tax. I would create new business opportunities, invite, obviously, you know, foreign direct investment. And by the way, when you become an attractive investment destination, your cost of capital drops.
Right.
So the cost of servicing our debt will drop. So the yields that we require to offer on our bonds will drop. And that will, it's a virtuous circle, which, you know, which presents itself as an alternative to the shrinking circle from which we're seeking free money.
Right.
There's no such thing as free money, man.
Right.
And everyone would recognize it. And everyone does recognize it. I'm sorry, but the truth always outs. And the truth about this country at the moment is that people don't see a future.
Yes.
And so all of this stealing and misappropriation of funds and raising 100 billion transformation funds and spending 60 billion on that and 40 billion on this and that are all just, if you like, channels for diverting capital, you know, they are not self-evident to me projects that manifest in the ground that can't go away.
Yes.
And if we had those, people would cheer and they would wait patiently for the true value to emerge.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a palpable sense that the window to divert taxpayers' money into your own pocket is closing, you know, and you can sort of sense people kind of rushing for the door, you know, sort of like, we've got to get this done now, because otherwise it's going to end. It's probably going to end. We're going to, it's got to, let me just, here's my tender.
Yeah, you'll go bust. You'll go bust as a country.
Right.
I mean, and, you know, I think if we were a country going to a bank, which is what we are,
Yes.
Other than begging,
right.
You know, other than going, please help us, give us some aid, other than begging, if you arrived at any one of our top five banks, presented the country's balance sheet and asked for a loan, they'd all turn you down. You wouldn't qualify for a loan.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
People invest capital in the future, not in repairing the past. We have to get on. Okay. Tim, you're making me angry already, man. Yeah. Yeah, it's your fault, obviously. Okay.
Let's talk about something good then. On the same topic, which is about investments. I mean, it's impossible to not
mention him.
Just be awestruck by the fact that Warren Buffett has resigned at the age of 94. I mean, are there compliments big enough for, I mean, or are we all slightly overdoing the compliment thing as far as Buffett is concerned?
No, I don't think you can overdo the compliments. I mean, 60 years at it, that's a long time. Yes. 1.2 trillion that he created, that's a lot of money, dollars, okay? And what did he do? Really simple stuff, value investing. Never got diverted, you know, was true and faithful to the cause, and bide your time. Those are the axiomatic drivers of a successful investment strategy, and we all know it.
Yes.
But few people have the discipline and the foresight and the insight and are prepared to take the trouble to diagnose, to seek value, rather than to listen to the wind. And, you know, most of our young people nowadays are listening to the wind. You know, they hear Bitcoin, then they hear NVIDIA, then they hear this, then they hear gold for a bit, and then they hear that, and they get caught up. And when you can hear what the wind is saying, it's already blowing past you.
Yes. There's just this one statistic which I think is just absolutely amazing. I mean, as you say, he's run this thing for six decades, but the company now has more cash than it has investments. It's an incredible thing.
Well, you know, that is a recent phenomenon.
Yes. No, exactly. Yeah.
Cash is not a great investment.
Yeah.
But cash, he chooses. Listen, I don't know enough of it, but it's self-evident to me that he chooses to divest.
Yes.
When value starts dissipating.
Yes.
Okay. And so he has one driver. Is this still a value play? And if it's a value play, we stay forever. And when it changes the nature of its character, when it changes its character away from that, we go.
Yes.
And so he's sitting, because if we indeed, driven by tariffs and wars and goodness knows how many unsettling trends in the world, if we are driven to a market crash or a decline in the market, cash is king, and then you buy cheap.
Yep.
You know, I mean, if we all had this insight. But I can assure you he's made mistakes.
Yes.
Along the way.
I mean, that's one of the interesting things about his, you know, because South Africa had at one point a lot of conglomerates, and in some ways still does. And they get a lot of flack for it.
Yeah.
And yet here is Berkshire Hathaway, 400 companies. And I think they do trade at a slight discount, but they don't get any criticism. Well, they do get some criticism, but I mean, you know, there's no substantial critique about that fact.
I don't think the analysis of conglomerates is binary. I don't think they're good or bad.
Right.
One of the reasons why we had such conglomerates in our country was because of exchange control.
Yes.
We all eventually had to invest in each other. Banks were owned by mining houses, and mining houses were owned by banks. And, you know, I was involved in some of those disinvestments, you know, and rearrangements. And there was just an excess of cash being generated principally by mining and natural resources in our country. And there we weren't allowed to invest it anywhere offshore. So we bought each other. So that was a bad reason for having a conglomerate. If you look at good reasons for having a conglomerate, they the power of capital to invest beyond the borders of your country, which is exactly the opposite of what we were allowed to do.
Right.
And they centralize, when they are virtuous, they centralize good management. So what he would be investing in is not the structure of the company, but its business model and the people at the helm. Then it doesn't matter what structure the thing takes, man.
Yes. He has spent the last part of his life really being a teacher and trying to, you know, just impart straight wisdom, which is a very intriguing concept. And I just love the idea that you can be both smart and simple, you know, at the same time. You know, you can be straightforward and you can bring real brain power to a topic, without making it complex, you know, without it being complex. That sort of balance, just a very rare thing.
I'll say that more directly. You know, simple is smart.
Yes.
Okay. Distilled essence and the ability to communicate it and discover it are at the center of almost any education or investment strategy or, you know, understanding. And good teachers distill the lesson into something that you can grasp,
yes,
you know, and that you can cling on to. And bad teachers, and I've had the experience of both, make it more complicated. When I read columns, and I'm a beginner column writer thingy, but when I read columns, the bigger the words,
yes,
the less the column. Okay, I'm sorry, but it's just like that. You know, when I've got to the fifth word that I have to Google, then I go, no, this column's full of shit. But, you know, this guy's trying to impress, not trying to communicate.
Well, I mean, you know, the one very good thing about Berkshire Hathaway, I think, is that the successor is very able.
Yeah.
In fact, as it happens, his name is Greg Abel, which I think is a very good thing.
Well, that's just another form of value investing. I bet,
yes,
he was groomed. Yeah, you know. Yeah. No, well done, Warren. You deserve a rest. I mean, the only criticism I'd have of him,
right,
is that he saw the need to stay there that long.
Right.
Yes. That's a flaw.
Yes.
You've got to go. And we've got some very successful companies in South Africa where the executives go at a very young age, 60 or even less,
yes,
sort of stay in the room, but don't insist on holding the, you know, the controls.
Oh.
And I think that is a virtue as well.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I quite like the fact that he's so old, and I get more of that feeling, oddly enough, the older I get.
It's nice to know that there are oaks older than us that are still compos mentis. I mean, never mind.
Yeah, yes, no, exactly.
Doing well, you know. And so I don't know his inner workings. Maybe he was just a figurehead at the end. Maybe he was just making sure of one thing, and that was that his investment philosophy pervaded the company.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, 94 is old, man, no matter who you are.
Exactly.
Anyway, good luck to him, and may he enjoy his retirement. He probably can't ever not focus on the markets. It becomes a habit. And there's another little axiom that I've learned. You know, I was having a discussion with one of my children the other day, and I said to them, it's only two drivers in life, good habits and bad habits.
Right.
Okay. And you must do your best to have some good ones. That I've got advice from someone else on. Talking about withdrawing from things, I mean, or leaving things, I mean, I see we're getting out of the DRC. It's beyond me. I'm out of questions, Tim.
Right.
What the fuck were we doing in the DRC? Okay. Okay. That's the question that comes to mind. And it seems like we're withdrawing from defense entirely, from any defense force capability. I walked past the entrance to Simonstown Naval Base the other day. Oh, dear me, there's nothing happening there. I now understand that we used to be, by the way, in the top three air forces in the world.
Yes.
Can you believe it, Tim? Not that I'm sure we ever had reason to be, but that was also another protecting government employees thing.
Sure.
But now we only have 6 aircraft and that function, and 325 are sitting in hangars.
Yes.
And we're coming back from the Ivory Coast. I don't know. I mean, there are so many ways to describe how we've lost our way.
Yes.
It has to crumble unless we gather again.
I know. Yeah. You know, and one of the characteristics of South Africa's military is that we have an absolutely extraordinary number of generals. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah.
Generally.
We've got more generals than generally. No, but it's because of that fruit salad.
Okay. The fruit salad.
Well, that's what we used to call those things, the epaulettes and the,
yes,
and the badges, and we used to call that the officer's fruit salad.
Right.
You know, the more color, the better. Some of those shirts must take a hell of a thing to put on in the morning.
I know. And what order you put
medals
them on.
And you weigh down. You don't have to go to gym when you're carrying. I was at the airport yesterday, and there was a collection of schoolgirls heading off somewhere, and you can see the star performers. They've got more badges and buttons and colors,
yes,
and things on their blazer that I could imagine carrying around with me. But that's probably merit.
Yep.
Our generals, we've got more admirals, I think, than any other navy in the world.
Yes.
And we've got no navy.
I know.
That's the beauty.
I know. That's the beauty of it. I mean, people are kind of celebrating the return of the South African troops from the DRC.
Mm.
I don't think it's a matter of celebration at all. I mean, it's a harsh thing to say, but people did die. And if you were not in a military position, to make an effective difference, then, you know, maybe you shouldn't be there. So, you know, I understand. But on the other hand, the whole point about the South African involvement was to try and keep the two kind of warring factions in Central Africa apart, you know, and that's a very tricky thing to do, obviously. Is it, you know, there has been a sort of peace process negotiated and signed. So, but actually the point about the peace process, I think, is that that requires more military presence, actually. Less, you know what I mean? Just because you've signed a peace deal doesn't mean that you should let your defenses sort of decline. And so to me, it's depressing.
You should also follow the money. There was a time, and I can't remember how long ago this still held true, when the US had to be at war.
Right.
Because 50% of their budget was on defense.
Yes.
And so if they didn't have a reason to build their military capacity and defense capability, so many people would have lost their jobs. I suspect there's an element of job creation despite its ineptness in our defense force.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, for sure.
Tim, we've got lots to worry about. I worry a lot. And maybe it's all of this worry is coming to a head because really we're looking away from things that are in a total mess and we best focus on them. It's like feeling some deep internal discomfort and not going to the doctor. That's where we are, my friend.
Okay.
We're going to find a horrible diagnosis and need to get there quickly.
Amen to that.
If that doesn't cheer you up, I don't know what will.
Yes.
And by the way, guys, I read somewhere we've got 6 weeks of 5-day weeks. Whoa, Luxem. How are we going to cope?
Oh, no.
Yeah, proper work coming. And it's winter. Have a nice week, people. Cheers.
Cheers.